People who live along the nation's Gulf Coast and southeast tonight. Nate, seen here from a Hurricane Hunter, is expected to make landfall just hours from now. And weathers from New Orleans to Florida's panhandle are being told to brace for the worst. The storm has already killed 22 people as it made its way through Central America. Officials worry tonight that a busy hurricane season has left many in the path complacent, despite what could be a deadly rush of water into low-lying coastal areas. Our team is all along the coast tonight. We begin with Carrie Sanders.
Preps for Hurricane Nate underway, but with mostly empty shelters along the Gulf Coast, emergency officials fear widespread voluntary evacuation orders have been ignored.
Just yesterday, the sun was out. It was a beautiful day. It's hard for them to believe that this storm's moving fast enough that it can be upon them by 9 o'clock tonight.
In Pascagoula, Mississippi, police going door to door.
Please don't wait till last minute if it starts to get bad, okay?
But at home after home, residents say they're staying put.
It's not mandatory for you to evacuate yet, but I highly recommend it because that's my job.
The lack of urgency in Alabama, too.
I'm Kristen Dahlgren in Mobile, Alabama, where the outer bands are now coming through. And as you can see, the Mobile Bay already topping its banks. Officials warning of a life-threatening storm surge here. Could be 6 to 9 feet before this night is over.
In tourist-packed New Orleans, canceled flights mean visitors are now learning what locals already know. This city is at risk because it's below sea level. When the city's pumps fail, as they did in August, widespread flooding follows.
It's really frightening, but you have to do whatever you have to do to get prepared.
This year's Atlantic hurricane season is now one of the 10 most active on record, with 14 named storms and 9 hurricanes, 5 of those 9 becoming major hurricanes, and the season's not over until the end of November. Tonight, the Bozzio family says they're staying put. Their home near Beach Boulevard in Pascagoula could see a 9-foot storm surge. Much of this area was destroyed during Katrina.
That's a hurricane. Everybody needs to be worried about it.
The docks here in Biloxi would normally, on any other day, have more than 300 boats, but the owners have pulled them out and moved them to high ground for safety. Meantime, if there's an area that understands a storm surge, it's here in Biloxi. Look at that restaurant over my shoulder. It's built up on stilts more than 3 stories high. Jose?
Carrie Sanders, thank you very much. Let's take a closer look at the timing and track of this hurricane as it gets closer to the Gulf Coast. NBC's Dave Price is here with that. Dave.
All right, Jose, this is what we know. This is a Category 1 storm at this point, just barreling towards the coastline. Its location, 140 miles south of Biloxi, Mississippi. Wind sustained at 90 miles per hour, but gusting higher than that, and there is still time for some strengthening. As this begins to roll on through, again, moving at about 23 miles per hour, it is going to push onshore and retain some of its strength. And that's why we have a major concern for areas throughout the southeast, all the way to Birmingham and Montgomery. We're watching for heavy rain, flooding, hurricane force winds, and of course the surge, a major issue, especially right along the coastline. The Louisiana-Mississippi border could see between 7 and 11 feet, and all the way to Mobile Bay, we could be looking at 9 feet. Eventually, the storm rolls through the Ohio Valley and up through the Northeast, and out of here by Tuesday. But it is going to be rough for the next 6 hours. Landfall expected between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. as we head through tonight.
Dave Price, thank you very much. In Salt Lake City tonight, there are new questions about the deadly police shooting of a black man after police body cam video was released. The officer who shot and killed the man was cleared this week before the video was made public. The 3 officers at the scene said they feared for their lives, but many in the community are asking, was the killing justified? Here's NBC's Matt Bradley.
Take your backpack off for me.
Disturbing new body cam footage just released by Salt Lake City Police shows the shooting death of a 50-year-old black man at the hands of a white police officer. Patrick Harmon was pulled over in August after authorities say he rode across several lanes of traffic on his bicycle. Police stopped and questioned Harmon. and after they found open warrants for his arrest.
Patrick, you already know about your warrant, right?
They tried to cuff him.
Put your hands behind your back.
On camera, Harmon appears to become emotional and then bolts from police. Two officers fired, one with live bullets, the other with a stun gun. On video, it appears the officer firing his weapon yells a profanity at Harmon, saying he's going to shoot him. Harmon later died.
Shots fired. Start medical.
Prosecutors say Harmon flashed a knife and threatened to cut the cops. According to the district attorney, police say they recovered a knife. They also released a still of what they say shows a knife on the ground in the body cam footage. It's unclear from the video whether Mr. Harmon did physically threaten the police with that knife or any other weapon. On Wednesday, the district attorney's office said the use of deadly force was justified because the three officers said the suspect was armed and threatening. But Patrick Harmon's family told the Guardian newspaper it was flat-out murder. Now, a protest set for tomorrow demanding justice for Harmon and his family. Matt Bradley, NBC News.
In Las Vegas today, words of healing and praise as many questions remain about the gunman behind the mass shooting in that city 6 days ago. NBC's Steve Patterson is there and has the very latest.
Tonight, frustration in Las Vegas.
I get it. We all want answers. We have looked at everything.
Investigators looking into more than 1,000 leads.
While some of it has helped create a better profile into the madness of this suspect, we do not still have a clear motive or reason why.
Officials tell NBC's Miguel Almaguer they believe the shooter acted alone.
He was the only shooter. I'm very confident of that. I'm also confident that there were no other people in the room.
Police are building a portrait of Stephen Paddock, looking into a cryptic note left in his hotel room with a series of numbers, questioning firearms dealers, and sorting through his prolific gaming history. Today, Vice President Mike Pence praising the spirit of Las Vegas.
I stand before you today on behalf of my family and every family in America to say we are with you. Today, we are all Vegas strong.
Meanwhile, along the strip, a stirring memorial, one cross for each of the 58 victims as this community makes every attempt to heal.
Volunteers at a garden planted 58 trees.
I think it's part of the healing process.
Many, like Mary Brooks, were there during the shooting.
This is the first I've been able to get out of the house since it happened, and I felt the need to be here.
A community now growing together, looking beyond the horrors of a night they'll never forget.
And late tonight, multiple law enforcement sources telling NBC News they believe the numbers on that cryptic note are actually the height, range, and distance of Paddock's shot placement. The calculations from that night, in effect, making the gunfire even more lethal. Jose.
Steve Patterson, thank you very much. After what happened in Las Vegas, organizers of big events around the country are taking a closer look at what can be done to protect large crowds. This weekend in Austin, Texas, another major music festival is underway in a city that knows what Las Vegas is going through. NBC's Maya Rodriguez is there.
At the Austin City Limits Music Festival, the sound of music fills the air as police and security officers fill the sprawling grounds.
I hope we don't have any major incidents.
Austin's police chief, Brian Manley, is tasked with securing a music festival that attracts 75,000 people a day over two weekends. After the tragedy in Las Vegas, he's had to reevaluate the festival's security plan.
You've got to realize that you do host the next large music event in the country.
Austin is also a city that understands profound pain. It was the site of a mass shooting in 1966 by a sniper at the University of Texas. 17 people died.
It never leaves your consciousness that your city is the home to really the first high-angle mass casualty incident that has occurred in this country. And so it's something we're very well aware of.
Around the country this weekend, beefed up security at other major events like Albuquerque's International Balloon Fiesta and New York City's Comic-Con. In Chicago, 1,000 extra police officers have been deployed for Sunday's marathon. Heightened security at mass events in an era where mass shootings have become more commonplace.
They happen with such frequency now that they are, we use the expression, the new norm.
A norm that sisters Christina and Jessica Hanna are learning to live with as they navigate the music festival in Austin.
It's a scary thought that you have to think about that. I mean,
happen, and you have to have a plan for getting out.
The shooting in Las Vegas prompted another change here in Austin. Festival organizers are now offering people refunds for their tickets if they no longer feel comfortable coming here. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News, Austin, Texas.
2.5 weeks after Hurricane Maria struck Puerto Rico, the government of the island said today that while 56% of residents now have running water, the vast majority still do not have power. While many supermarkets have now reopened, people in more remote areas are still calling for help. We get more from NBC's Mariana Atencio.
In the town of Comerío, people are pleading for water.
From the bottom of my heart, please help us, because we're dying here.
With a group led by San Juan's mayor and medical teams from as far away as New York and California. Susan Gillespie is a nurse practitioner from Oregon.
It's a war zone. They need help here.
Have you seen any sign of supplies coming this
way?
None, zero. Medicine?
Nothing.
The volunteer doctors and nurses climb this mountainous neighborhood called Cielito, which means heaven, to deliver supplies and give medical care.
There are around 20,000 people here in the city of Comerío. The mayor says 60% of the homes totally damaged after Hurricane Maria.
It is especially tough on the elderly and sick to get the care they need.
Señora. Uh-huh. ¿Cuál es su condición?
Cancer.
You have cancer.
Across Puerto Rico, so many are struggling. Roughly 90% of this island still has no power. Slightly more than half have running water. Today, a bipartisan congressional delegation surveyed the damage. For those in this countryside, help can't come fast enough.
Well, how happy are you to see these doctors from the mainland? Are you happy? That's a smile we wanted to see.
After days of despair, today, hope in this village called heaven. Mariana Atencio, NBC News, Comerío, Puerto Rico.
President Trump has reached across the aisle once again, this time on health care. The president said he spoke today to Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer about the issue. NBC's Peter Alexander is at the White House with more.
Tonight, President Trump off to fundraise for Republicans, but calling the Senate's top Democrat, Chuck Schumer, to revive Obamacare talks.
If we could do a one-year deal or a two-year deal as a temporary measure, you'll have block granting ultimately to the states, which is what the Republicans want.
The president on Twitter announcing the call to see if the Dems want to do a great health care bill, adding, who knows? His presidential pivot following Republicans' repeated failures to repeal and replace Obamacare. Schumer telling the president that's off the table, instead promoting a bipartisan deal already in the works that would stabilize the existing system. Many Democrats remain skeptical of Mr. Trump's intentions, arguing his administration sabotaging Obamacare. Just yesterday, rolling back a key requirement that employers provide free birth control coverage. Still, it's not the president's first dance with Democrats.
Chuck and Nancy would like to see something happen, and so do I.
Last month in the Oval Office, siding with Schumer and Pelosi to keep the government running. Republican Steve Scalise with Chuck Todd explaining why.
The president looked and said, if the Senate Republicans aren't going to be able to move an agenda, maybe I'll look around.
Also tonight, another cryptic but ominous comment from President Trump, this time tweeting that years of diplomacy with North Korea has failed, arguing only one thing will work. What is it? A short time ago, he told me, you'll figure that out pretty soon. And after our exclusive report of friction between the president and his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, President Trump acknowledging tonight they disagree on a couple things, saying sometimes I'd like him to be a little bit tougher. Jose?
Peter Alexander, thank you very much. And House Majority Whip Steve Scalise joins Chuck Todd for an exclusive interview tomorrow morning on Meet the Press. Still ahead tonight, some call them angels. We have heard a great deal about the high cost of life-saving drugs, but tonight we focus on clinical trials, which can offer the best hope for some patients. While the trials are free, transportation, lodging, and other expenses can be costly. And that's where three remarkable sisters come in. Our medical correspondent, Dr. Don Torres, has more.
At 12 years old, Brittany Powell was diagnosed with a deadly tumor in her spine. Doctors told her she had 6 months to live.
My whole world seemed like it ended at that point.
Then Brittany's mother found a promising clinical trial for an experimental drug. But the trial was 400 miles away from her Sacramento home, and they couldn't afford the travel expenses on top of their medical bills.
I wasn't working. My house was in jeopardy of being foreclosed on. I had no money, no resources.
The treatment itself is free in a clinical trial, but patients and their families have to pay for everything else, from gas to hotels to child care.
They're not able to say yes when they really want to.
Brittany and her mother were desperate until they met three remarkable sisters, Karen Ambrogi, Erin Miller, and Dana Dornsife, who turned out to be three angels, all too familiar with the hidden costs of clinical trials. When Erin's husband, Mike, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and given just 5 months to live, they had to decide whether to spend thousands of dollars on a clinical trial.
Mike had to decide whether or not he was wanting and willing to spend that money to participate in the clinical trial and take it away from his family.
Then Dana, in a selfless act of generosity, offered to help. Mike lived another 19 months. The sisters started hearing from dozens of others also struggling to pay.
We've had people sell their home, divest themselves of any possessions other than a vehicle and some clothes for their back.
So together, the sisters started the only organization in the country that pays for the out-of-pocket costs of clinical trials. Funded by donations, it's called the Lazarix Cancer Foundation, and today has helped 3,000 patients, including Brittany. That clinical trial saved her life, and the drug is now saving thousands of others.
I helped with this study, and now people younger than me, people older than me can get it.
Brittany, now 20, wants to become a doctor. That never would have happened without the three sisters.
Karen, Erin, and Dana, mm-hmm. You're still here.
Still fighting the fight.
As sisters.
Always.
Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Danville, California.
And up next, we'll go to wine country. Record-breaking heat late this summer hit California's wine country hard. Grapes became dehydrated from temperatures well above 100 degrees some days. And this put the vintage in jeopardy, forcing growers to get creative to save their crops. NBC's Jolene Kent has the story.
Well before the sun rises in Napa Valley, the hustle to harvest is on. Lee Hudson's vineyard crew sweeps through row after row of Merlot grapes.
We had nine straight days of over 100 degrees, and that required that we get the grapes off the vine before they got too sweet.
The heat dehydrated grapes, some shriveling on the vines.
What we had to do was pick 18 straight days, 10 hours a day at night. It's been a very compacted harvest, very challenging.
Winemakers like Pam Starr and St. Helena had to cut off whole grape bunches that couldn't take the heat.
This will not make it into the tank.
Her Crocker and Starr Winery lost half its best block of grapes.
I don't think I was sleeping very well when the temperatures went up.
Chris Benziger wants only perfect fruit to make his wines.
What we're really worried about is raisining, because raisins are little sugar bombs, and they can really mess with the vintage of a wine.
The shaking tables and optical sorters help.
This thing has really saved our skin this year. Bad grapes or raisins get kicked out, and only the best grapes go in right here.
Still, Napa and Sonoma Valley growers estimate they've lost between 10 and 20% of their crops. The heat and the losses forcing vintners to get creative.
This year, we're going to really put our winemakers' hats on. The berries have less juice. And so with less juice, we have to sort of change up what we're going to do in the winery.
The good news for wine enthusiasts, prices are expected to hold relatively steady as wineries prepare to absorb the costs. But many are worried about a future of unpredictable weather.
We've been farming for four decades here. We've definitely seen climate changes, hotter periods, longer heat spikes, less rain.
For now, winemakers say they can take the heat no matter the losses, seeing the glass half full. Jolene Kent, NBC News.
And we are back in a moment with something I guarantee. After a tough week, I want to end tonight with something to lift your spirits, hopefully make you smile a bit. Thanks to the Toronto Zoo, which came out this week with a compilation video of its two-year-old giant panda cubs figuring out this whole walking thing. Take a look and you'll see what I mean. NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. Tomorrow, we'll bring you updates on Hurricane Nate on Today, MSNBC, and on Nightly News with Kate Snow. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time, and good night.
Americans watch NBC News than any other news organization in the world.